Hello, Simma. How's it?
Hello, hi.
Great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for joining me. I've been very excited about this.
Oh, you're welcome. Yeah, I'm excited too.
Wonderful. I absolutely love your work, by the way. Every time I see it, I know it's you on the Facebook groups and things.
Right, thank you.
So, would you like to introduce yourself and tell everyone a bit about you?
Yeah, sure. I've been working as an artist for about 8 years. Before that, I worked for about 20 years in IT. I was interested in art when I was younger, but nothing really kind of came of it. I mean, it's always been a lifelong interest and passion. And somehow I drifted into IT. So I travelled around the country, travelled abroad, teaching people various things. And just one day, I just had a bit of an epiphany. I was just sitting on a train one day going into London. The train was late, it was pouring with rain.
The usual.
And I just thought, I can't really do this anymore. I started looking at a few tutorial videos. I got myself some pencils. And then it all kind of started from there. And that was about 8 years ago. So here we are.
That's so wonderful. And is it colour pencils you started with or pastel straight away?
It was pastel straight away, Stemmer. So,
Okay.
because when, I mean, what happened initially is I had a request from someone to do a pencil drawing. And I started doing the pencil drawing and I thought, oh, this is just taking a really long time. Is there a better way to draw animals? And so
Yeah,
I
it
searched on
takes a
you
while.
yeah so I searched on YouTube, and I think the first set of tutorials I saw were those by Jason Morgan.
Oh, yes.
Jason was kind of like the pioneer, if you like. He's the one who kind of started using pastel pencils first, and I was just blown away by what you could do with them. So I kind of put my graphite away, bought some pastels. I think I bought a set of 60 Carbothello pencils, and I really, really never looked back from then. I just absolutely loved them. I like the flexibility, the range of colours, the fact they can be laid. They really are fantastic, in my opinion.
No, they really are. Like, I haven't actually tried pastel pencils specifically yet. I've just tried mixing pan pastels with my coloured pencils.
Sure. Yeah. No, I've tried pan pastels. I mean, a few years ago when I was a bit flush, I mean, I treated myself to the full set.
Oh, that's nice.
And they're really, really nice.
Yeah, they
It's a
are.
classic, art thing. You can never have enough supplies. And in fact, it took me quite a long time to even get them out of the box because they look so beautiful, arranged in all their colours, views and everything. But eventually, I did get round to using them, and they were okay, but they just weren't for me ultimately.
Oh,
Because
really?
no, because I think for me, it's because they just lack a little bit of opacity.
Okay.
I like, yeah. So they take quite a lot of work to get kind of good coverage, if you like. And I was finding I could get more of the result that I wanted just by using normal pastels. I mean, to give you an example, this is what I've done here. I mean, on this piece of pastel mat, I just use a it's white pastel mat. I use white pastel mat now almost exclusively, simply
Really?
because, yeah, because you could put a very light layer of pencil over the top, and then just using a stiff brush, just use some isopropyl alcohol, and then you can create a tint on the paper of any color you like.
Oh, I see.
So
That
I've been kind of
sounds
doing
good.
that. Yeah, so I've been doing that ever since. And you can do it with your underdrawing as well. Just a very light layer of pastel pencil or soft pastel. And yes, I use the isopropyl alcohol because it's simply because it dries quickly. And yes, as I say, you can tint them any color you want. So I chose purple today simply because the leopard fur, he's brown, which is kind of a dark yellow. So yellow is the complement of purple. So it'll just create a bit of interest in those areas where the paper shows through,
Yeah, definitely. Oh, that's very interesting. I didn't know about how you could create a tint for your paper.
Yeah, so you don't lose any tooth of the paper at all. I mean, you don't need a lot of pastel. I mean, this is very, very light.
Because it looks very pigmented as well. I thought you were using like grey pastel matte or something.
No. It's just. I think it's in fact this pencil, which is. I think it's a Carbotello. So very, very light layer, and then the alcohol effectively dissolves it, and then you can spread it around the paper. I actually did a few. I mean, you can see. I just tried a few different shades of purple just to see which one I like. That's the original white.
Okay. Is that Clairefontaine pastel matte then?
It is Clairefontaine, yeah. Yeah, these are just some offcuts. I'm glad I kept my offcuts now, yes. Emma.
Yeah.
Paper that size I wouldn't normally keep.
Honestly, that's why I also like this book, because I've got so many like scraps of paper from like things of cutting commissions and that kind of stuff. And it's like, oh, what can I use this for?
Yeah, it's always good. I mean, because the thing that I'm not a particularly good person at doing, I'll be the first to admit, is I don't practice enough. I mean, this is really, honestly, this is the first kind of thing I've really drawn in about a month. Over the past kind of few years, I've had to kind of get, a couple of side hustles, simply because of the economic climate that we're in at the moment. So I've gone back to teaching again. I've just had a few little teaching jobs here and there. It's about 50-50. So I've been doing some kind of mentoring, kind of one-to-one. I've done some work with art clubs, art societies, art groups. And that's quite steady. I've got another one, I think, next month. Now, they're actually a client that I went to see last year. So that's going on. And like I said, because I've had that to do, my drawing has kind of fell by the wayside somewhat. But, I still love doing it. And I've actually got a commission that I've just started work on today, in fact.
Oh, tell me what it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's the first commission I've had in quite a while, but it's actually quite a complex one, because I have to bring together three separate photographs.
Oh, okay.
It's a dog and two cats. And the thing is, the two cats were photographed indoors and the dog was photographed outdoors, so the lighting all completely different. I've had to bring all my kind of years of experience with Photoshop to bear, trying to get everything to match up and everything, and I think the final thing I did this morning took me quite a while, because I had to remember how to do it. I had really wanted to get the cat's tail to kind of fit into the picture. It was kind of drifting off the edge of the page. So I remembered how to kind of, you can kind of warp things in Photoshop. So I got the tail and I managed to warp it around and things like that. So I've sent it off to the client now, just to like a mock-up.
Yeah.
And as soon as they approve that, then I can get cracking.
Oh, that's fantastic. It's a breath of fresh air hearing how your process works, because that's exactly what I do. Mock-ups in Photoshop, send it to the client. You don't start any work until they're happy. Like, it's just so important not to basically waste your own time, isn't it?
I mean, you kind of learn that through experience, don't you? I mean, I've learned that through experience, because then it's better for you, it's better for the client. You know, if they won't need any kind of minor things changing, you can do that.
And they know their pet best. So if you think that that's a really nice composition, they might not necessarily like that. So it is important to keep asking their opinion, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. Yeah. And I like to do it in stages as well, because quite often you're given a photograph with not particularly, a good background, shall we say. So rather than kind of worry too much of the background at the start, I like to kind of say, well, let's get the composition right first. These are our subjects. That's the most important part. And then we can worry about the background afterwards. So, as I say, a very, very rough version of the composition, which they now had. And then if that's approved, then we can start talking about the background and so on and so forth from there.
Do you often like to include a background in yours?
I never used to, because I think a lot of artists, they used to frighten me. but now I put them in all the time. I think I don't really think a portrait's complete without one, really.
It definitely feels like something's missing, doesn't it? Because I do backgrounds all the time now.
Yeah, I never thought that initially. simply because I used to spend so much time on the portrait, and just the fact that we have to do something else that's actually bigger than the subject with just as much detail was just kind of too daunting, if you like. But you know, we evolve, don't we, as artists? So now, you know, I really couldn't do without one. I feel I have to put one in, even if it's just like a basic tone.
Yeah, you know, like a gradient or something.
Yeah, just something like that, you know.
No, that's really lovely. Yeah, I definitely got to the point where I feel like I wanted to challenge myself more as a pet portrait artist, which is why I started adding backgrounds and specifically asking customers and clients if they wanted backgrounds in. So I do try and put them in all the time now, unless they specifically don't want them.
Yeah, no, I'm the same. I just think, you know, it kind of ties the picture together, because, you know, quite often a client I found will have kind of like a favourite location that they've been to, but they won't have a picture of their pet necessarily at that location. So it kind of makes the portrait more memorable, if you like, for them.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that's really nice.
How's your drawing going? Mine's okay at the moment, I think.
Yours is looking great. Yeah, you've got good sketch in there.
So I'm a bit rusty and I haven't warmed up either. I like to kind of do a little bit of a warm up first, but
well, this is your warm up. This is your little practice.
I think this is a fantastic idea, actually. So I'm really excited by it, actually. I mean, because these little 7x7s, they take a long time to do, and they just keep keep the practice kind of going.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so pleased you like it, because I originally created this idea for myself. Because I couldn't find the time to practice. I felt like everything, like, you know, when I thought of something for myself, I think of a big piece. And then I'm thinking, well, I don't have time to create a big piece. I've got a load of commissions to do and other stuff. And it just kept being put off. And then I wasn't practicing anything different. I wasn't creating anything different. Like, this is literally the first time I've ever done a leopard eye in 8 years of being an artist, which sounds, you know, crazy. As an animal artist as well. So I literally didn't have time to do anything outside commissions. So I thought if I did just small little sections of things that I find interesting and textures that I've never done before and animals I've never done before, then that would be a really good way to practice and enhance my skills. And it really did make me fall back in love with colour pencil again.
Right.
Because I just felt a bit stuck with it because I was drawing the same things over and over again, you know?
Mm. That's quite interesting. Mm. I've kind of done the same thing with oil painting in a way, because I'd love to learn oil painting. I mean, I've dabbled, I've done a few pieces, but I bought some canvases and I was just kind of overwhelmed by the size of the canvas, you know?
Yeah.
We're so scared of failure and things not working out. So what I did instead is I bought, just a big, went down to the local DIY shop, just bought a big sheet of plywood and just cut it into little 4x4 and 6x6.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, and so I did about, I don't know, about 50 altogether. I think half of them I sold. And of course, you can probably guess what happened to the other the other half. But see, it took away all that pressure of doing a large piece.
Yes.
You know, it really helped me kind of learn how to kind of handle the medium and things to look out for, ways to approach it and so on.
And it really how long have you been trying out oil paint then?
About a year now, I think.
Okay.
About a year. So, I mean, I've had the paints longer than that, really, but, you know, rather like the hand pastels, they kind of just sat in a tin.
Yeah.
Waiting, you know.
Mine is the same. Mine's in a box waiting for me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit of a procrastinator anyway, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm the classic, I'll do it tomorrow kind of person, you know. But yeah, so I've got some more, actually. I think I bought some, whenever Jackson's has a sale, I mean, I'm there anyway. I'm going to buy something. So I did buy a couple more paints, and I've got a new palette, a glass palette, so I'm going to try them out again. And I quite like them because, so my aim with oil paints is not to do the really kind of highly detailed work that I do with pastels.
Yeah.
I'd like to keep the oil painting kind of much looser.
Right.
Um, And it kind of would give me a nice kind of break or alternative from, you know, what I do with pastel, because by and large they are very detailed.
Very,
And I say it's quite refreshing sometimes just to try something different.
Yes. I love the little sausage dog you did. Is it? I don't know if you did. It was recently.
Oh, yes.
But with the coat on.
Yeah, the little Harris tweed coat. Yeah, that
yeah.
was.
Yeah, oh, was that cool. Tweed is just divine.
I love it.
I don't know how you did that.
No, I don't know. Do you know what it was? I think. I mean, it's like a lot. I shouldn't really be admitting this, Sam, really, but it's all smoke and mirrors, really.
Yeah.
I mean, I've never done it. I never. My attempt is never to draw every single hair.
Mm-hmm.
It's just to create the illusion, if you like. And I think
yeah.
the most important thing in any kind of painting or drawing is just to get the lighting right. If you get that right, you know, then any you can add a little bit of detail, but its purpose is really just to enhance what's there.
Mm-hmm.
So with that tweed coat, I think, I can remember, what I did is I created kind of like a patchwork of colours.
Right.
And then I just, because if you look really closely at the texture, it's kind of really wiry and kind of haphazard. The kind of strands seem to go everywhere.
Yeah.
So that's the way I approached it.
Okay.
I didn't really kind of try and pay too much heed to, because it wasn't fur, you see. Fur's quite ordered, isn't it? And quite structured. But I tried to avoid that and really just did kind of random kind of wiry hairs. I had to do a few layers, but it actually turned out quite well, I think, in the end. I was very pleased with it.
Yeah, it was really beautiful, really captured the feel of that warmness and the, you know, you feel like you could feel the tweed.
Yeah, no, I was really pleased with that. That's one of my favourite pieces, I have to say. Quite a sad story, though, actually. The owner of the two dogs, because she has a sister, Hazel, who are also painted. I haven't posted her picture yet. They both passed away quite recently. So it's always adds a little tinge of sadness, doesn't it? But you feel so kind of honoured, if you like, to be able to memorialise them in that way.
Yeah, very, very honoured. It's also quite sad when I've had a couple of instances where I'm literally drawing the portrait as the pet passes away.
Right.
And it's just so sad. But the owner is also so happy that they commissioned me before the pet passed, so they could have that.
Yeah. No, it's inevitable, isn't it? It's going to happen.
Yeah. So tell me more about your artwork. Like, do you do competitions, or have you tried to do like gallery expeditions or anything like that?
I've tried competitions. I mean, when I first started out, I the usual kind of track. I went in for the David Shepherd.
Yeah. Okay.
Award. I did that for a few years. You know, it was okay. You know, fantastic calls, of course.
Yeah.
But I just kind of lost interest, really. I mean, I still donate what I can, but I just do it via my own way rather than do it directly via competitions.
Yeah. Okay.
I got in last year to the Exhibition of Wildlife Art. That's the one that's held, is it somewhere in Lancashire or Cheshire?
Possibly, I don't actually remember.
I've won that. They've sent me an invitation to do it this year as well, but to be honest with you, I don't think I'm going to be able to get anything done in time. As far as exhibiting goes, it's mainly just been locally, really. Where I live in Kent, there's quite an active kind of art scene. And so there are a number of art societies. There's quite a good art kind of department in the local council. And every year they have like an arts festival. So they kind of take over various venues in the town and artists can display their work or do demonstrations. You know, for the past few years, I've been down at the local market and the stalls there are giving us, we're temporary kind of stall holders, if you like, and we can put work out there and do prints and stuff like that.
Oh, that's exciting.
Yeah, no, it's good. It's good. So it runs every year. Doesn't cost anything to attend. And, you know, it's one of those things, you know, it's it's kind of like a long-term thing. It's great to have these events, but very rarely do you make any money or sell any work while you're there.
Right.
But you do give out lots of business cards. So
do you find people contacting you after then?
Yeah, quite often, yeah. Yeah, so that's the thing. You have to give out. I mean, my kind of logic behind it is, you know, if I give out 100 cards, even if just one of those people comes back to me with it, you know, then it's kind of worthwhile, if you like.
Yeah, definitely. Rule of 100.
Right, let's do some blending. I don't know if you've seen these things before. I started using these. These are great.
Oh, no, I haven't. Cool. I normally use this soft tool for blending.
Oh, okay. Yeah, with the pan pastel tool.
Yeah. So what's that? Is that like rubber or something?
It's a silicone tip. They're called colour shapers.
Right.
All comes in different shapes and sizes and kind of firmness. But it just gives you a little bit more control because of the very fine point.
And they're a little bit
more robust than the...
Oh, and they come in different sizes.
Different sizes, yeah. I mean, I've got... you know how it is. As I say, you can never buy just one.
Yeah.
So I've got, you know, loads. But,
lots of different shapes. Yeah, okay.
To be fair, I do use them. They all have their kind of purpose, if you like. But...
Mm-hmm.
But kind of like the square ones and the pointy ones are particularly good for things like fur.
Yeah.
Because obviously fur is kind of pointed and you can create, you know, the little lines, the little blends and so on.
Okay.
And you get that little level of control that you can't get with a finger.
Yeah.
Or anything else.
What brand is that again?
This one is Royal Sovereign.
Okay.
I think you can get them at the colour pencil shop or... I think Colin Bradley Art.
Okay.
Colin Bradley, he's a pastel artist, but he's got a shop as well and he does them as well. So.
Okay. I wonder if you can get them on Jackson's Art Supplies as well, probably.
I do, actually, but they're much more expensive, I think.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, because I had a look every day.
Oh, very interesting. I've never seen those before.
And it saves your finger.
Well, maybe I have, but it looks like a brush.
Say they're great. The thing with pastel is when you first put those first couple of layers down, it just generally looks pretty awful, in my opinion.
Yeah, the ugly stage.
Then, you know, it starts to kind of take shape.
I've tried using colour pencil on pastel mat as well. I actually did yesterday. And I do find it just takes such a long time to fill in the tooth.
Yeah, well, I use the sanded papers as well. I don't know if you've ever seen those. Have you seen the proper sanded papers?
No.
It's essentially sandpaper.
Right.
And it comes in a variety of different grades, rather like sandpaper.
Just go to Home Base and buy some sandpaper.
Yeah, there's a couple of manufacturers. I think the most popular one is by an American company called UART.
Okay.
And I bought a couple of sheets of it, and it's great. It's different to pastel mat, but I find that you can't get quite as much detail.
Because
it's so rough, yeah. But the colours seem to be more vibrant on it.
Okay, that's interesting.
I think that's the general rule. I think if the coarser the paper, the more vibrant the colours can be. And there's probably a technical reason for that. It's probably to do with the way the light is scattered or something like that. I mean, I don't know, I'm guessing. But no, I've used those and I really like them. And they're also like pastel mat. You can use kind of like water or alcohol on them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to tint them, or you can do things like that.
Okay, very interesting. Now, I like this tinting idea, because then it sort of stops you buying a pastel mat in every color, I suppose.
Right, yeah, it's a kind of unnecessary, isn't it?
Yeah,
in a way, because you're limited, if you like. I mean, you can buy, I don't know how many colors there are now, but you're kind of limited, aren't you?
Yeah, you're definitely limited, because I was thinking the other day, I'd love to have, because I quite like to do a contrasting color of pastel mat and then put my drawing over the top. That's what I've been playing with lately. But I've only got like some greys and some yellows at the moment.
Right.
So I can only really do like blue things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I say I only use the kind of white now, but I've been reading through from some other artists that it's been having some quality issues recently, pastel matte.
Yes, I've heard that too.
So I don't know what's happening there. I mean, I've got some from Jackson's last week, and that's all okay. But I mean, a lot of the problems that have been mentioned. I mean, I've had paper like that, but you can just use some gesso just to go over it. You know, artists use on canvas.
Yes, yeah.
Just use something like that to, you know, go over any imperfections or problem areas, and then you can just use it as normal.
Yeah. Have you tried that pastel ground?
I haven't, no. I want to, and I
Yeah,
will
me
do.
too.
Yeah, when nobody seems to stock it. I haven't really found.
Really?
I don't think Jackson's are doing it yet.
I found it on Amazon, but it just seems a little bit too expensive to
Expensive,
play with.
yeah. And I like buying paper now in kind of big sheets, and then can just cut it up to order if you like.
I used to buy all of my commissions in gummed pad sizes. So it was very standard because I just do standard four sizes basically.
Sure.
So I used to have a gummed pad for each size because then it was just very easy. You know, you just tear it off, start, no measuring, no cutting. But
Yeah, I
I've run
think,
out of storage now.
yeah, I think, yeah, you're right. No, I think the only reason I started buying sheets was because I had a request for a guy wanted a client wanted a landscape piece
Oh.
that was kind of like 100 centimeters by 70 centimeters, and of course you can't buy pads that big, so I had to kind of buy two. And I think when I was buying it, I just kind of worked out that hold on a second, this is actually much cheaper than buying, know, pastel matte and pads, because you can just cut it in half, and then one of the halves cut in half again, and just kind of do that, and you end up with a variety of different sheets
And now you can use all your scraps for this
for this
book.
book. Yeah, it's fantastic. It's a
Yeah.
win-win.
What's your favorite animal to draw then?
It's got to be the big cats, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, any big cat really. If I had to choose one. But what, anything with texture really, that's what really interests me. That's what really draws me to a reference photo, I think. I'm not saying that the type of animal is secondary, but what really attracts me initially is like a combination of colors, or, you know, as I say, a texture. I suppose elephants as well, I like to.
Yes.
Done a couple of those.
Have you? How did they turn out?
Okay, I think the first one I ever did is the best one.
Oh yeah? When you
Yeah,
didn't know how to
when I didn't know how to
do
do it. Yeah, so when you, yeah, that's the classic story, isn't it? It's like
it.
some of my favorite kind of pet portraits are the ones I did really early on, because you don't overthink them, if you like. So.
Yeah, that's what I found like when I've started sort of teaching what I do, and then I have to actually think about what I'm doing, and then I feel like I overthink it.
Yeah, you do.
Whereas now I
You have
just
to do
zone
that.
out and don't even think about it.
Yeah, no, I have to, as I say, now, you know, we've been doing this for a few years. You're absolutely right. You can't really afford to overthink it. So, I mean, I used to try and work to kind of like a strict sort of 9 to 5 day, but that just didn't work for me. So now and it used to worry me because I thought, well, I'm not going to get the work done, and so on. But the problem with it is that I just couldn't get the creative things going, you know. And more often than not, I'd end up with a piece in the bin because, you know, I was kind of forcing myself to do it. So now I just kind of naturally let it take its course. So, and for me, quite often, to the frustration of everyone for my family, it's quite often quite late at night. You know, you could be reading a book, or you could be watching a video, and you'll just get that little kind of flash of inspiration, and then you'll want to start creating, you know.
Yeah,
But
definitely.
that's generally the way I work, you know, now. Do my most of the work in the evenings. Like to put some music on.
Nice.
And you know, do some practice first, or read some books. So I love reading, and it often gives me some inspiration, or gets me in the mood for drawing. But I don't.
What do you do about any block then? Do you just try to distract yourself?
That's a good question, actually. Yeah, I mean, I just leave it. Like I say, I try not to force it. I mean, sometimes. Yeah. Sometimes when you have a commission, you know, you don't have any choice. So
yeah, that's what I was going to ask next. Yeah, what do you do if there's a deadline?
So my rule of thumb there is just try and do 5 minutes.
Yeah.
If you can do that 5 minutes, that 5 minutes might turn into 10 minutes, which might turn into half an hour.
Yeah.
You know, even if you could just do that, you know, it will soon add up. And it's what I did today, you know, with this current commission. I mean, it's really difficult. I mean, you know, selecting an animal with fur from a background.
Yeah.
I've done it for a long time. I did a lot of work in IT. I did a lot of work with Photoshop, and I did a lot of courses for people who worked in the fashion industry, and they were interested in, you know, how to select hair and select models from backgrounds and stuff like that. And of course, the skills that I learned doing that, of course, naturally lend themselves to selecting elements.
That's incredibly useful.
But I didn't want to do it this morning. I really didn't want to do it. But, you know, I just did 5-10 minutes, and, you know, 2 hours later, I was pretty much done and sent it off to the client. So, you know, it's just overcoming that initial reticence to start something.
Yeah.
You know, it's not going to be like that every time. Sometimes, you know, we'll just throw everything down and say, well, it's just not going to happen today. And I have done that. But more often than not, you know, you'll end up putting in a good couple of hours.
Definitely. I always find that if I have that kind of block as well, sometimes it's just about just sitting down at your drawing desk, picking up the pencil, and almost that's enough to get over it, you know?
Yeah.
Just by sitting there in front of your piece.
Yeah.
It really does help.
Does.
Yeah. I always find after a long break of not drawing, I forget how to draw. Do you ever feel that way?
I'm struggling, Sarah, yeah. I have to say.
Right now. It's looking incredible. You're getting those tones in beautifully.
Well, that's... that's the thing I kind of focus on. I mean, if you could see me now, I mean, I spend most of the time just squinting.
Yeah.
Because all I'm really trying to do is just get the light and area, you know, looking at big shapes, big light areas, dark areas, and getting those in. As I say, the kind of detail part is kind of extra. It's just the icing on the cake.
I don't know if you... to get the eye in first.
Oh, that's my little treat, the eye. I like to do that at the end.
I couldn't wait to the end. I have to do it first.
No. Well, little bit by little bit then. I mean, yeah, I'm just dying to put that highlight in.
Yeah, sorry, I already put mine in. But yeah, I can see what you mean by like getting in all those lights and darks first.
Yeah, I mean,
blocking them in.
Yeah, you can also see I've left some areas of that purple showing through.
Yes.
I've deliberately not gone over them because I just think it adds a little bit of interest.
Definitely.
Because black, you know, is just like a dead colour. It will flatten anything. So
yeah,
I try not to use it unless I absolutely have to. Obviously, with the leopard spots, you're kind of don't have any choice.
I'm using sepia. That seems to be a good colour for
it is actually
in shadows. It warms it up a little bit. I also never look at the names of the pencils I'm using. I just like pick them up.
I've actually got a little kind of side project on the go at the moment, because I see on a lot of the Facebook groups, you know, a lot of beginners are worried about choosing the right colours and so on and so forth. So again, just from my background in IT, I did quite a lot of programming and development. So I'm working on a little utility where you can upload a reference photo,
Right.
click on an area, and it will tell you the pencil that's closest in color to it.
Wow, that sounds fantastic.
It's at the moment it's suffering from what's called scope creep. So the things that I initially wanted it to do and the things that I keep adding to it just keeps
Right.
growing. Because it's a huge job, because obviously I need
The data of
all
every
the pencils.
pencil.
I need all the pencils, and then I need to scan the swatches of all the pencils, convert them
Right.
into color values, and then write the code to match that to what's in the reference photo. But it's happening. When it will be finished, I don't know, but it's happening. And
What are
hopefully it will
you
be in
using to write this code?
the at the moment I'm doing it at the moment in Excel, in Visual Basic,
Yeah,
because
okay.
it's very quick and I just know how to do it there.
Yeah.
But I'll
Yeah.
probably translate over to Visual Studio and use something like C or C sharp at some point. But just for kind
Right.
of fleshing it out, if you like, I'm gonna start by using that to say, because that's what I know.
Yeah. No, that sounds really exciting. You'll have to let me know when you've done
I
it.
will. Sure.
Let everyone know.
Well, that's the goal, really. Hopefully, it will be, once it's done, it will just generate its own income. I can just sort of put it up for sale on my website or somewhere like that, and then see what happens.
Yeah, no, that sounds like an incredibly useful tool. I've made very basic tools, like I made the pricing tool generator. So you put in like the height and width and stuff of your canvas and hours it took to create it and all that kind of stuff. And then it like spits out what an approximation of what you should price it at. So I found stuff like that quite fun to create.
I used to really struggle with that. I mean, pricing work, but
It's a big struggle, but I think it's mostly a confidence thing rather than a skill thing.
yeah, no, I agree. But now it's just a formula for me. I mean, I used to try and think of, various kind of convoluted ways of trying to come up with a price that I thought was acceptable. But in the end, I just kind of, now it's all based around kind of inches and square inches and so on, and that just works, for me. I don't try and make it too complicated for the client in that, there's no kind of what's the word, different kind of pay structures if there are multiple subjects or you want to include a background and so on. I mean, I've kind of dispensed with all that and just have it based on square inches or linear inches,
Keep it simple.
and then whatever you end up with, you just kind of use a number to multiply that by to get your final price, if you will. And I'm happy with it, and clients seem okay with it, so.
Yeah, because pricing is very personal as well, so you can, try and follow somebody else's structure, but at the end of the day, you've got to do what you're comfortable with and what works for you as, I guess, a business owner as well, selling your own artwork. So how do you sharpen your pastels, pencils?
I used to use a kind of sharpener, but now I use one of these. I got a big box of these from Amazon.
Oh, okay.
Just single edge razor blades. I mean, they cost about, I don't know, it was a box of 100, and it was about 8 quid. So I just scrape off the wood till I get down to the lead, if you like, and then just use a little piece of sandpaper just to give me a slight point. I don't try and get too sharp a point, because if it's too sharp a point, you tend to fiddle too much, I find. So you get the gist of what I'm doing, I think, even with
Yes. No, definitely. Oh, someone's asked, what is the white pencil the Paul is using on the top of the darks?
this one. This is I use for the fur. I've used three Caran d'Ache pencils because they're really soft, And they're kind of like the most neutral brown that you can buy. This is the darkest one is Van Dyke brown. This one is French grey. I think it's French grey 50%, and that's
I
French
love a
grey,
French grey,
and that's
yeah.
French grey 10%. Yeah. So they're the three I've used, and I've used this is a Carbothello. I think it's a dark ochre. That's just to add a little bit of warmth to the fur here and there, just glazing a little bit of colour over the top that I can see. Now, quite often, I mean, I'll just add it for the sake of it, not because it's there, because I just think it adds a little bit of interest. You know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work, but there we go.
Yeah.
It's all about experimenting.
Definitely. I think that's what I like to tell beginners is there isn't really a right color, I'd
No.
say, because also everybody sees different colors.
You're right.
Like,
Well, I
so
mean,
I might see a purple and you might see a blue, but you know, they're very like similar, but we choose different colors. Like, I think even when you just read out all the colors you're using, I'm not using any of those
no.
colors that you're using, but our things still look, you know, similar. So I think there
Well, I mean,
isn't
I
really a
think you're
right color.
absolutely. Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. Value is more important. So how bright or dark the colour is. If you get the value right, then you get some leeway with colour.
Yeah, definitely.
There's a saying, isn't there, that value does all the work and colour gets all the glory. So
Ah,
because we're kind
that's
of, you know,
good.
that's the thing we're kind of drawn to, isn't it? Colour. But in any kind of great work of art, it's the values, the darkness and the light that, you know, make it appealing, I think. As well.
Yeah, definitely. It's all about the values, isn't it, for making it look realistic.
Yeah, as I say, I spend most of my time squinting at the reference, so I can go a bit lighter now, I think. I try not to. That's another thing I try and do, is the temptation is to try and rush and go too light too quickly or too dark too quickly, but I try and hold back. Because if you go to white straight away, there's nowhere else you can go.
Yeah,
If that
yeah.
makes sense.
I guess
So
because you're
I'm
using
holding.
pastel, you can layer what a light over dark. I'm using colour pencil and I can only really go the other way, so I layer dark over light. So I can't go dark too quickly. Otherwise it's very hard to recover from that.
Do you I've seen a few artists use that technique in emboss.
Yes. Yes, I use an embossing tool. I mainly use it just for the whiskers because I don't really like having a load of dents in my paper. But if there's very like bright whiskers, I'd use it for the whiskers or like the little eyebrows and that kind of things on a cat or a dog. But yeah, I only use it for like those very bright white areas. How about you?
Yeah, well, I've got the Caran d'Ache again are fantastic because they're that little bit more bit softer. They can layer over other pencils really well, and you'll still get quite a bright colour. So I haven't got them with me now, but there's about three or four whites that Caran d'Ache do, and they're very, very slightly tinted. One's
Pastel
tinted blue,
ones.
yeah. One's
Ah.
tinted blue, one's tinted yellow, and I think there's another one that's red. And I use those for, you know, those whiskers and things like that. So
Ah, okay. That
it's
sounds
all
nice.
about going in with the white. So
Yeah. I love Caran d'Ache Luminance White. I use that all the time for whiskers and going over everything.
they're I mean, for once, I think the you know, they have a reputation for the being very expensive, but I think it's justified. I think they are worth the money, to be honest.
Definitely, yeah. Do you suggest getting their pastels then? Are those your
If you're,
favourites?
yeah, if you're a beginner, I'd recommend either the full set of Carbothellos or the full set of Faber-Castell. And once you're happy with those and familiar with those, and you just think you feel, well, I need a few more colours, then maybe expand out into the Caran d'Ache, maybe. I mean, the reason I started getting them is simply because they have a couple of colours in there that I really like the look of. There's some,
Yeah.
I think there was one called Violet Grey, a really kind of pale greyish purple that I
That
really
sounds
like.
good. Yeah, I like lots of warm and cool greys. I find like I use them all the
Yeah,
time.
they're very kind of underestimated greys, I think.
I find that Faber-Castell has a really beautiful range of greys.
They do. The colour pencils. Well, I bought one on impulse. I bought the full set of polychrome. Are they
Oh,
polychromos, polychromo. Yeah, impulse buy.
yeah. Do
And
you use them? Do they get used?
no, I think I sold them somewhere actually,
Oh, okay.
or they're languishing in a storage box somewhere. But they were beautiful. I did a couple of pieces of work with them. And I remember the greys were beautiful, yeah, because there was a set of about six warm greys and there's about similar of cool greys as
Yeah,
well.
yeah. It's 1 to 6 of cool and 1 to 6 of warm. Yeah, I use them all the time. I have to keep, I think the greys and probably the whites and blacks is what I have to keep repeatedly buying. But I did buy the full sets of everything.
Oh, I have to. I mean,
Yeah.
I talk myself into it. Like, well, it's only another 10 quid, or you know.
That's funny.
It's not a cheap proposition anymore. I mean, a full set of Caran d'Ache, is it? Let's be honest.
No, very hesitant to buy, especially if I'm not sure if I'll like it. I'd like to buy a few separate ones first, try it out.
Still looks a bit flat to me, so.
Tell me more about your plans for your art then. Like, what are you sort of doing at the moment? Do you have any big projects or are you just doing commissions?
Well, the art kind of went off the boil for 2 years. I mean, I've only just come back onto social media. I was off social media for a couple of years as well, and just kind of rethinking everything and but I'm getting back into it now, and yeah, I do have plans. So I want to be much more active in terms of kind of things like YouTube. Even if it's just, you know, the kind of thing we're doing now, or it's how-to videos. But you know, the thing with it is, you know, everybody's doing these kind of videos. So, you know, I'm trying to think of things that would make what I do a little bit different. So, as I say, I've got a lot of experience with Photoshop. And you know, there's things that I do, and it's just second nature to me. And I'm sure that some of it would be useful to other artists. So I'm looking at doing a series of, you know, Photoshop, basic Photoshop skills for artists. You know,
Yeah, like
how you
prepping mock-ups and things
prepping
like that. That sounds really
mock-ups, yeah.
useful.
You know, preparing images for print. You know, adding, you know, correcting color balancing. Know, combining multiple images, that kind of thing.
Probably digital artists would be interested in that too.
Oh yeah. Oh, that's something else I've tried to get in as well. I mean,
Oh yeah.
that justified my iPad purchase. I bought myself
Oh
an
yeah.
iPad just so I could try Procreate.
Yeah. How did that go? What did you think?
It's great. I try and do something when I, you know, once a month, or if I've got 10 minutes or something like that, but I'm just finding it really hard to get into.
Right.
But I just, it's like anything, you know, I need to persevere with it. If I persevere with it, then, you know, I'm sure I'll start to enjoy it a lot more.
No, definitely. I haven't tried digital art yet. I think there's still a lot of physical art that I'm want to practice first.
Yeah, so for me, it's oil painting first. The last little thing I'm working on at the moment is, because I've looked at my kind of directory of all the work that I've done over the past 8 years or so, and you know, there's over 200, 200 paintings there now.
Wow.
So I thought about it for a while, but now the means to do it is that are actually much more available. Of creating a book, a nice kind of like coffee table book
Oh,
with all like my
nice.
favorite kind of works. I mean, it used to be the case that for something like that, you had to go down the route of something like Kickstarter to get the funds to, you know, publish it and produce it and so on and so forth. But now you can, there are print on demand services, aren't there? So
Yeah.
that seems like a much more viable route.
Is it like a book for your commissions then, or is it your private
It's
collection?
mainly going to be, I think it's mainly going to be the wildlife work that I've done.
Okay, yeah.
But I will certainly include some commissions, I think. Or I might put that in another book. I'm not sure. I'm just kind of working on organizing all the files at the moment and making sure they're all nice and clean and so on. And I've got a basic layout that I've created.
Yeah, well, that sounds really lovely. It's very similar to what I'm also doing, which is a.
Yeah, so hopefully that'll be done, this year, I'm hoping.
Yeah, no, that sounds lovely. I'd love to see it when it's done.
I'll send you a copy.
Yeah, oh, great. Now, I'm also doing the same thing. I'm trying to do a coffee table book type thing of all my commissions because I've done over 300 now.
Right.
So it'll be nice to see them all in a
Yeah, because
book.
each one tells a story as well, doesn't it? I mean, there's things to talk about as
Exactly.
well. They're not just kind of nice pictures to look at. I mean, I've got tales of some of the wildlife pieces I've done,
Oh,
like
yeah.
my one and only experience with Vella paper,
Oh, yeah.
for example. Yeah, have you used that? Do you know about Vella paper?
What's
It's
Strathmore vellum?
sorry, not vellum, Vella,
Vella.
Panemula vellum.
Oh, okay. No, I don't.
It's a pastel paper. How do you describe it? It's a bit like it feels like material.
Oh.
It's very weird.
Okay.
I tried it, but the thing is, it requires a completely different approach. So what I did is I just kind of slapped the pastel on the way I do, with a bandel and layered it and so on and so on.
Yeah.
And as I was walking away, my foot caught the corner of my, what was a drawing board at the time, propped up on a table.
Right.
And everything fell off, fell over.
Right.
The drawing board, the piece, everything, and a
Oh
huge cloud of pastel dust
no.
went up into the air. And yeah, I just stood there kind of gobsmacked for about 30 seconds.
Oh my
And then,
God.
yeah, as the dust was settling, everything was getting covered in pastel dust. I essentially had a blank piece of paper in it.
Oh no, it just
So
all
the difference.
came
It
off.
all comes off. With velour, you have to absolutely kind of rub it in as if your life depended on it, depends on it,
Really?
which I
Oh
didn't,
no.
appreciate at the time.
Oh no.
So, needless to say, I've still got half of that sheet still in my portfolio somewhere. Didn't really use it again, but some artists have used it. I mean, I know Emma Colbert used it. And she's done beautiful, beautiful work with it. But you have to be more patient and methodical with that, especially with your blending.
Right. Okay. Make sure you really push it in then. Oh no. What a shame.
I think I redid that piece on pastel wet in the end.
Well, it's fun to try new surfaces though, because you never know like how it comes out or how it changes your sort of technique and style. I feel like my style is slightly different depending on what paper I use.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that actually. I tend to paint much more loosely on the kind of sanded papers.
Yes.
I say I quite like that. That's a couple of wildlife pieces that I've done where I haven't in fact used pencils. I've just used kind of pastel sticks.
Right.
And no, it's great. It's quite refreshing. It's quite to change things up like that once in a while is great. We'll always come back to pencils though, but but say using pastel sticks once in a while is great.
Yeah, I think it allows you to be a bit more like expressive as well.
Yeah, see, I like that. I think I mean, I don't know if I'm alone in this kind of evolution, if you like, but when I was kind of started out, I just loved detail. I mean, and I still do. But as a kind of artist, essentially, I mean, for want of a better phrase, I just got bored of it.
Yeah,
It,
bored
it,
of
it's
doing all of the
great.
detail,
It's great, but it's so time consuming.
yeah.
And so, I try now to introduce that little bit of looseness. And whereas before I might have kind of focused on an area, for like an hour, to get it absolutely identical to the reference. Mm. Now I'll just spend a few minutes, and if it looks vaguely, you know, like it, then great.
Yeah.
As I say, this for me, it's kind of like an evolution.
Yes.
From that kind of tight detail work into something a bit more, you know, loose, if that makes sense.
And I think that's what makes you more of an artist, because you're not supposed to be a photocopier. We're not trying to copy every detail. We're trying to give our impression of what we see
exactly,
in the picture.
Exactly. Yeah. And I never really understood that.
Mm.
You know, I mean, the artists that I love, and the artists I really envy are the artists, you know, you can do these incredible oil paintings in like a couple of hours, and they're just as realistic or give a convincing impression of realism than someone who's
spent
20 hours rendering every last little bit of detail.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of like where I'd like to be at some point. You know? I'd like to kind of achieve that level of.
I feel like you're definitely closer than I am. I still draw every hair. Not every hair, but I rough hairs. Lots of hairs.
See, all my pencils started off in a box, man. They're all kind of spread all over the desk.
Yeah, I keep dropping mine on the floor. Oh, our time is up, Paul.
Oh, wow. That's gone real so quickly.
Very quickly, hasn't it? Just 1 hour. But we've both got pretty far.
That's great.
It's nice to see what you can do in an hour, isn't it?
No, I've really enjoyed it. It's been fantastic. Thank you.
Oh, good. I'm so pleased. I hope you do carry on with this book and share your progress.
I will. Definitely.
Yeah, it's a good way to, like, just get in there a bit if you haven't done it in a while.
Oh, I agree. So I've really enjoyed it. Yeah, it's okay. I'm quite happy with it.
I love it.
It's okay.
I feel like the colours are exact on yours.
Yeah, they are pretty close. I mean, that's something that I've kind of learned, if you like. I mean, I used to really obsess over that. I mean, I still do it. I mean, I did one of these before we started.
Oh, yeah?
You know, just it's a little swatch thing just to check.
Nice.
But
I never do that. I should probably do that.
These are my kind of first choices of colours anyway, so it's almost redundant.
Yeah.
So that's something that I've kind of learned over the years. I can just pick a colour and, you know, generally it's in the right ballpark.
Yeah.
If you like.
And again, it's just so nice to see, you know, we're both, you know, two artists that have been drawing for the same amount of time, and we both use the same picture, and it both comes out
differently.
But still realistic. It's nice to see the styles are different, isn't it?
Oh, it's great. Yeah. I don't know about you, but as soon as I leave it, I'll start to see things that are wrong with it.
Don't ever look at it ever again. That's
no.
The key.
Yeah.
Well, please do send me a picture of it when we're done with this chat, because I would love to share it. And thank you, everybody else, for joining us today. It's been wonderful. If you're not already, please go and follow Paul. And if you want a practice journal of your very own, you can get it from learnmycraft.com. So we've been drawing from this African Wildlife Edition, and we did number 99 today. And on learnmycraft.com, you can also watch a few tutorials, some more episodes of this podcast, and you can go to YouTube to watch this episode with me and Paul. So thank you so much, and see you next time. Thank you, Paul.
Cheers, Emma.
Bye-bye.
It's been a pleasure.
Bye. Take care. If you've enjoyed listening, remember you can watch this podcast with video and no ads at learnmycraft.com, where you'll also find animal art practice journals, books, and tutorials to get you started. Hit subscribe and follow the podcast, and we'll see you next time.